Now, if you go back into the Old Testament, you just turn to the left just a little bit, a few pages, you're going to get to the book of Jeremiah. Anyone ever read Jeremiah? It's an amazing book. But in the book of Jeremiah, about halfway through, he prophesied again, because he's a prophet of the Lord, that Israel, because of the rebellion and their sin, they would be exiled by the Babylonians, and they will be captives for 70 years. Say that number with me, 70 years. As we open up into the book of Daniel, we're in the sixth chapter now, and of the 70 years of prophesied captivity, we are in the 68th year of it. How old do you think Daniel? Remember, he was a young man, maybe 13, 14, 15 years old when he was first taken from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. How old do you think then he is now, Bible scholars? He's in his 80s. So in these last 2 years of the 70 years, it takes seven remaining chapters to explain. See, the first six chapters are all historic of how we saw the hand of God, the sovereignty of God through Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Nebuchadnezzar. Do not leave him off your list now. Did he love the Lord after a while? Yes, he just had to go out on a camping trip out in the wild, and he came back a revised man. Now in Daniel chapter 6, we're going to conclude the historical part of Daniel. But in the next seven chapters, it doesn't deal with history. What is the opposite of history? Prophecy. What's going to come? And I'm telling you right now, if you just open up to this Daniel 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, your mind can start spinning like when you took calculus for the first time. Now I'm going to tell you right up front, we are going to deal with those chapters, but not a chapter by chapter study, because I'm going to tell you right now, it's not, some of them, the chapters are not really Sunday morning friendly, but I do believe the Lord gave me a message that will help understand what those prophecies, some that have already been fulfilled, some who are being fulfilled even this day right now, and some yet to be. Jesus went back and he authorized and he put his stamp of approval on the book of Daniel. John in the book of Revelation, he put his stamp on the book of Daniel. And we're going to take out of the last seven chapters what is most important for us to know today. Now, you can continue on in your study in Daniel. You can get detailed about the 770s, and you can go on and on. That's up to you. But we're going to pull out of there what the church needs to hear today, just like we're going to do today with probably one of the most popular stories in the entire Bible, Daniel and the Lion's Den. It is a scary chapter. And I know some of you are saying, oh, Pastor, I have heard a sermon probably once every 5 years from this. I probably have heard more sermons on this chapter, Pastor, than you've ever preached. But just like every single chapter in Daniel so far, I believe the Lord has a unique message of application for us today. See, the book of Daniel isn't just about a bunch of faithful Hebrew boys who are now men, older men. The book of Daniel is actually about the sovereignty of God. How God, even when things seem to be falling apart, he is still in control, even if you and I have deemed him not being in control. See, the first six chapters talk about how these Hebrew boys, from teenage years through all the way throughout their life, in all kinds of circumstances, every single one of them showed one thing: they did not compromise. There was no compromise found in these four men, and I'm sure many others. Daniel survived being exiled, being ripped away from his homeland. Daniel survived being underneath the crazy rule of a Babylonian king named Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel survived when he told that king, you're going to die, your kingdom's going to fall apart, and it's going to be conquered by a lesser kingdom. And then the lesser kingdom came in because it paired up with another kingdom, and sure enough, Daniel's grandson or son was killed on that day, and now Daniel is in the midst of yet serving another king, but not from Babylon, but now from Persia, or Medo-Persia if you're historical. Imagine if we didn't have Daniel. Oh my goodness gracious. But Daniel chapter 6, I believe, being probably one of the most popular, has become so familiar that we just skim through it. Yeah, I've read this. I've even seen the movies. I saw VeggieTales. I've got it all. You go back, you divide it up a little bit. You know what's really? It's Daniel in the Critic's Den. That's really the title of this. In fact, when you get to Daniel chapter 6, you're going to find the first instance or first example of a politician. Critics, bureaucrats are found in Daniel chapter 6. I'm going to try to let the text speak for itself this morning. I'm going to have the text up on the screen. I know some of you really like that. But I want you to open up to Daniel chapter 6 because I want the text to reveal something new and the Holy Spirit. I guess if you were to give this message this morning, it would be no compromise in the critic's den. When we look at the first few verses, we're going to see it starts off with King Darius. Now, King Darius was a Mede. He was a Persian. There's a little controversy about who this might be. It doesn't matter. The king is in charge. His name is Darius, and he has officials helping him rule the kingdom. Now, how many of you know God always places a good man, a good woman in key positions? We've seen this in the first five chapters. We're going to see it again. It's going to record how jealousy of some grew into conspiracy. Conspiracy is often birthed out of you have something I want, and I'm going to create a situation that you lose what you have and it'll become mine. All right, so let's look at the text real quick. Let's first of all start with the first three verses. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into how many provinces, Craig? 120. And how many seats in government legislation do we have? 120 provinces. And he appointed high officer to rule over each province. Okay, how many provinces? How many rulers over each province? So there's 120 politicians. There's 120 people who are overseeing the king and his kingdom. The king also chose Daniel. Back on the scene. How old is Daniel right now, Edna? Probably in his 80s. Very young, very young. And two other administrators to supervise. So how many administrators are over these provinces? Three. Daniel and two other administrators. The high officers, and to protect the king's interests. Now, when you see that word interests, basically what that means, it's a real short term, to collect the taxes. To collect the taxes, bring the money in, take care of the kingdom, take care of the army, protect his kingdom. And the most important thing, the interest, is what is he interested in? Getting your taxes. If you don't pay your taxes, do you think someone's going to show you interest? And if you don't pay your taxes, do you think you're going to show some interest? Absolutely. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than any of the administrators. So of the three, which one was more capable over the three? Daniel. God always puts the right man, the right woman in the place. And when you stand up for truth and righteousness and you don't have compromise, everybody takes notice. Now, because of Daniel's ability, given by God, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. You know what you'd call that today? The vice presidency. Now, he's not taking the king's place, the president of the kingdom. But in case something would happen, the king said, who's going to take place? The one that he trusted the most. Who did he trust the most? A Hebrew that is in captivity and slavery, who has risen through the ranks because of who he is as a man. He is basically the vice president. Isn't it great to have a vice president in the waiting who loves the Lord and serves God and stands up for truth and righteousness? Wouldn't you love to live in a country that has a president that does a vice president for the same thing? I would. Amen for that. So here we are. We get the set. There's King Darius in orange, yellowish, whatever that color is. Then the other administrators and the high officers, that's the 120, began searching some fault in the way Daniel was holding governmental affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. What does that do a politician? If you're running up against someone has taken the spot you want, what are you going to try to do as a good bureaucrat? We're going to find something for you. We're going to use fact checkers. Ooh, I didn't say that. We're going to look back. We're going to go through all the files. We're going to look all of his Facebook postings. We're going to go find something. Now, if the most important thing the king needed these 123 men to do is to cover his interests, which is what? Money. Daniel was the one who basically was the treasurer. He kept everything in line. All the others basically had to report to Daniel. Now, I know this is far-fetched, but a lot of the politicians in the book of Daniel, here in the story, they're greedy. They're sinful. They want one thing, and well, they actually want two things. They want power, and they want money. And they collected taxes from 120 different provinces. He's handling the government's affairs, but they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn him. Why? Because he's a man of truth and righteousness. That's why King Darius appreciated, respected him so much, because he was faithful to the king, trustworthy. The righteous man was trustworthy to the unrighteous king. Why? Because God puts kings and authorities, what? In places. Daniel's not compromising. Since we can't find anything to get him on, since we can't dig up any dirt to find, gotta find something else. And one time, maybe they're walking through the corridors of the palace, and they're going, wait a minute. Since we can't find any dirt on him, let's see if we can put him in a position of compromise. Ever hear that word before? Let's see if we can put him in a place where he's got to make a choice, and neither choice is any good. Ever been on a ballot and say, oh my gosh, who should I vote for? The least of the most evil? Oh my goodness. So, only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel would be in connection with the rules or the laws of his religion. Is Daniel a religious man? He is. This is what we call the trap. Critics found nothing. So they decided that they're going to create a law, a situation where they are going to force Daniel to choose between obeying the law or sinning against God. Now they created this new law. Here we go. So the administrators, how many of them are we talking about? There are two of them right now. The administrators, because Daniel's one of them. The other two, we might call that, you know, maybe the leader of the Senate, House of Representatives, whatever you might want to call these leaders, administrators. And the high officers, how many was that? 120 plus these two. They went to the king. Who's the name of the king? Darius, and said, long live King Darius. We're all in agreement. Ooh, okay, that's a full sentence right there. We've taken a vote. The king should make a law that would strictly be enforced. Give orders for the next 30 days, say that number. Any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, remember they live in a polytheistic community, culture, except you, O Majesty, will be thrown in the den of lions. Who is most commonly thrown into the den of lions? It's almost the same answer as those who are most commonly thrown in the Roman Colosseum, the Christians. Now, I've read some little things about lions. Do you know that in this area, in this Jerusalem, Babylonian, all this area, lions are very common, very, very popular. Because of the song, we think lions roar in the jungle. They live out here in this desert prairie area, what looks like maybe Africa. There are lions everywhere. And so the Medes and Persians, they would throw these lions into the pit. They'd have the palace. They'd have how you have a fruit cellar? They have a lion cellar with stairs that go down. And there was a lid. You open up the lid, and there's Colosseum there, sort of seats watching. They throw that person down in. And what do you get? You don't really get to see it. What do you hear? Well, after you hear all the growling and the roaring, you hear people being torn from limb to limb. It's been a theme in the book of Daniel, hasn't it? So, King, we want you to make this rule. Here's the trap that they've set. Anyone who prays to anything or anyone else except for you for the next 30 days, they're going to be thrown in the lion's den. We want to elevate you. You are king. You are majesty. You are actually like a god. Now, how do you think Darius felt about that? I like that. I get their money. I get their allegiance. And I get to be their god. I like this. So this is what he says. Now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed. The official law of the Medes and the Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. Now Daniel is going to be put into this trap between a rock and a hard place, making it illegal for Daniel to pray. Now I was in Israel a couple of years ago. Boy, a couple of years ago already, that's crazy. Three times a day, what do? They pray. There's bells and the towers going off, praying three times a day in the morning, noon, and evening. Daniel had a habit of praying. Isn't that a good habit? He opened up his window, and the window would always be pointing toward Jerusalem. And he's been praying like that for over almost 70 years now, three times a day. That almost becomes obvious, doesn't it? Since they couldn't find anything to condemn him because of his bookkeeping, we're going to put him in between a rock and a hard place. A friend said to me once, a lot of crimes are not sins, and a lot of sins are not crimes. Because Daniel, he was convicted of a crime that's not a sin. Remember how Daniel chapter 3 was the war over your worship? Daniel chapter 6 now is going to the provocation over your prayer. You understand what the word provocation means? Well, in case not, I'll bring out Webster for you. Another guy named Daniel said, provocation, a test to elicit a desired response. How many of you know that you've been put to the test from here or there once in a while to elicit a response? You know, right now, people are trying to provoke you to certain responses on Facebook, social media. If we can just provoke them, then the spiritual fruit of self-control goes out the window, which I think is the most needed fruit of the Spirit today, self-control. And if we can provoke them, they will lose their righteous thinking. How many of you have been ticked off by someone? How many of you know that people will just say something to get you unglued? And then they're going to hold you accountable to what you said. See, I told you. Look, it's right here. I have it on Facebook. I have it recorded. I have it in print. Because he got so upset, she got so outside of herself that she just was calling me names. So here's Daniel trying to be provoked. Commit a crime or commit sin? I'd rather be convicted of a crime against the state of California than a sin in the state of God who watches over me. Amen. That is the problem that we face the church in today. Don't do this. Don't do that. Trying to be Darius over us. We need more Daniels and Danielles to stand up and say, I am not going to compromise. I'll do it safely. I'll do it responsibly. But you cannot tell me not to pray. Well, Pastor, the saint didn't tell you not to pray. Oh, yeah? He told you not to sing and not to chant. Chanting is praying. He told you not to worship because praying is worship. Did we just not get done singing and praying under the umbrella of one word? What? Worship. And if the enemy can get you to stop worshiping, he has deflected and tricked you into worshiping something else, convenience, and he's made you compromise. But in my book of Daniel, it says these guys did not compromise, yet they still had integrity. They still had the favor of the government. And the politicians were ticked off at the church, or Daniel. And they're going to set him up and get you so used to not meeting together and being the church gathered, as Hebrews 10:25 tells us to do, that it becomes more comfortable to sit and watch and not participate. There's been a 40% decrease in people viewing and watching and participating church services. Then we get to the test. But when Daniel learned of the law that had been signed, what did he do? He sent out a petition. This is not fair. This is not right. I have the Bill of Rights. You know what he did? What we should keep on doing. What did he do? He went home and knelt down as usual in his upper stairs, in the upper room, and with this window projecting toward Jerusalem, he prayed 3 times a day, just as he had always done. He didn't compromise. He says, fine, if you think it's illegal for me to pray other than Darius, fine. I'm going to give you 3 reasons, morning, noon, and evening. Catch me. My window's open, and there's Daniel praying, facing Jerusalem, and he's thanking God. He's thanking God. He prayed 3 times a day, just as he always done. And what did he do? Lord, rescue me. Lord, take this away from me. Lord, I don't deserve this. I have served you for 80 years in captivity. I deserve your blessing. If you don't, I will compromise. No, how did Daniel pray? Giving thanks to his God. God, Darius is evil. Get him out. It almost reminds me of some New Testament teaching. Now I know where Paul, Peter, and Mary got it all. They thank God. So then the officials found him praying. It could be the two. It could be the mob of 122 found him praying. Was it hard to find him praying? No, he went home to do just every single day, 9, noon, 5, or 6. He prayed and he opened up his window. So they went straight to the king and reminded him of his law. Did you not sign the law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except you, O Majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions? The king, of course, said what? Yeah, of course, the king replied. That decision stands. It is the official law of the Medes and the Persians, and it cannot be revoked. You think the king should have been a little smarter? How do you think the king felt about Daniel? Any idea? Well, we know how the other politicians thought about Daniel. Daniel knew his God. They knew that Daniel was going to pray. And they knew, because of Daniel's track record, they knew that he was not going to stand down. That he was going to stand up, be firm. And they knew he would not bow down to any man. Why? Because they've seen his track record. The fruit will always reveal the root. It sort of reminds me of a person that I met via Facebook. I haven't shook her hand yet. Her name is Shannon Grove. Anyone ever hear of Shannon Grove? If you're participating in my Facebook or the church's Facebook, she's the California Senate Minority Leader. She is a spirit-filled believer who's been standing up in the den of godlessness, California Senate. She's praying, she's battling in the critic's den, serving her sovereign God with words and action. I was given that link. I saw a church up in Northern California, Destiny Church. They invited her to their gathered service of probably thousands of people. They invited the minority leader of the California Senate to come to their church. And their pastor, man, interviewed her. And nothing but Jesus came out of her mouth. She's praying, and she's given the church hope. Yes, was it illegal? Absolutely. And she was willing to do that. She's in the midst of the lion's den. She's standing up for truth and righteousness. You should be praying for Shannon Grove. 29 seats, I'm sorry, we have total, there are 40. 29 are Democrats. To stop any law or bill, or to start, you have to have a majority vote of 21. Do you think that she's outnumbered? And who is responsible for putting state senators in their place? Before they're in their place, the voters. She is standing up for truth and righteousness. You need to pray for her because she is in the den of critics. I'm reminded of the critics' den of many city mayors and chiefs of police who refuse to participate in arresting California pastors and congregants who are openly inviting people to their public services. There have been churches up and down our state who have been fined, who have been threatened by state officials, but they refuse to compromise. You can't tell us. They'll use biblical support, constitutional support, and science to support the fact that gathering does not harm. And there are many state or city mayors, like the mayor that we are serving under, a Christian woman who refuses to go down that road of politics, a Christian chief of police that says, I am not going to send anyone to block the parking lot of that church. We are blessed because we have Christian mayor, Christian chief of police, but not every city has done. Just look around John MacArthur. Just look up Pastor Cho in Pasadena. We refuse to compromise. We refuse to give in to the Darien thought process and the critics. I'm reminded of the critics' den in Washington, D.C. this whole week when the nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, was being questioned and being criticized repeatedly over and over again for her faith, her morality, and her professionalism. They couldn't find anything to go against her. They couldn't create anyone to come up with a story to go against her morality and her convictions. She's as crystal clean as you can ever have a nominee. So what do the critics do? They'll find something else to create fear. And that's what they did all week long, to create fear, because they know they've lost the battle. Why? Because God puts people he wants in the places that he wants them. There's a Danielle going to the Supreme Court, my friends. These new laws were set in effect in Daniel's life. Am I going to create a crime against the state, or am I going to create a sin against God? I don't know. That's pretty easy for me. After all, isn't that what that one pastor said? Sure, fine, arrest me. We don't have a prison ministry yet. Fine, let's go. That's what Paul did. That's what Peter did. Okay, fine, because I'm not going to sin against God because I want to compromise and have contentment with you. I don't want peace in my life. I want a peace of God in my life. I'm going to be as responsible as we possibly can with the science and the knowledge that we've been given. No compromise in the den of critics. He told the king, Daniel, one of the captives from Judah, is ignoring you and your law. Now, you notice how he did that. He still prays to his God three times a day. How did they know that? It's on video. They got him. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled. Not angered, not provoked. He was troubled. There was something wrong. And he tried to think of a way to save Daniel. Why? Because he respected Daniel. He valued Daniel. They didn't have the same belief structure. They didn't have the same commitment to God like Daniel. But he trusted and favored Daniel because he was righteous. He was faithful. He was a man of integrity. So it greatly upset him. Fine, I'm going to find a loophole. I need a lawyer. He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of this predicament that he fell in the trap for. In the evening, the men, 122, we don't know, came back and said, Your Majesty, you know that according to the Medes and the Persians, no law that the king signs can be changed. And the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. How do you think that made him feel? What did I do? You know, we can make some really stupid laws that actually hurt people. And I can fill the rest of our time with A, B, this, and S, B, that, of all these insane laws and bills that are being passed before us. You ever do something, you think, I wish I never would have done that. I wish I would have thought first before I acted. I wish I could take back that Facebook post. Oh, you may delete it on your side, but it's out there. This is how the king's feeling. He's troubled. And the king said to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you. Is he believing on God or in God? He's believing in God. This tells us what's happening. A stone was placed over the mouth of the lion's den. The king sealed it, sealed the stone with his royal seal and the seals of his nobles. Could be two others. It could be 122 others, all putting their seal of approval and protection. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. They say he was fasting because he couldn't eat. He wasn't praying and fasting. He couldn't eat. He refused his usual entertainment. I won't go there. And he couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early the next morning, he got up and he hurried to the lion's den. Ever wait for that sun to rise? When he arrived, he called out in anguish. Not anticipation, but in anguish. What's the definition of anguish? It's a lament. Daniel, please, Daniel, tell me your God performed. Daniel answered, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouths so they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight. And I have not wronged you, my majesty, your majesty. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. And not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted, what? In his God. Wow. It is so important for us today. How did Daniel survive the lion's den? How did he do that? What cause, what connection did he have with God that God favored him in this? Just like his friends in the fiery furnace. Why did God show favor? And how can God show favor to us for those who are living in the lion's den, living in the critic's den? How can we give God glory through our story and stop praying for relief from the traps and the testing, but allow them to come in and consider it pure joy when you face various trials of many situations to give God glory? How can we be more like Daniel? What did Daniel have that we need today? Daniel had courage to trust God, even when the lions were roaring. Daniel had character to stand firm, knowing that God would be with him even among the lions. Think about Daniel going down those steps into the lion's pit. I'm not calling you lions. Down in the lion's pit. How many of you would say, God, this is a good time for you to have a plan B? Why are you allowing me to go through this? This is not fair, God. You know how many times I've been in church? Do you know how many offerings I've given, God? I have earned the right for you to rescue me. I want you to get me out of here. God says, I want you to go down the stairs. I want you in the lion's den. But God, they're going to kill me. Why are you so limited and understand I'm sovereign? I created everything. I created the lions. And if I tell the lions, you've got an upset stomach, you're not hungry, he's going to listen to me. Daniel, are you going to listen to me? We don't have people willing to go down the steps and get into the pits of danger anymore because we're so scared at the roaring of the lion. Daniel survived that because he also had a commitment to remain faithful even in front of the lions. Do you think it was natural for him to be in front of the lion? You know what happens to a lion just before it's ready for its prey? It begins to salivate. Just getting things ready, wondering which limb he's going to go for first. Daniel was committed to God, even if God said, your time's up. He was not going to give any critic assurance of their questioning. My friends, today more than ever, we need believers who choose courage over contentment. We need believers to choose character over compromise. We need believers. Churches have commitment over convenience and comfort. Let me ask you this question. Do you think there's any lions left today? And you and I are in the lion's den now. Whether you want to admit it or not, you hear the lions roaring. and you see the lion's face once in a while, and are you willing to be among the few willing to go down for his glory to be shown through your faithfulness? Well, Pastor, I don't see any lions walking around. Do you see, how many of you have ever seen a lion walking across Ramona Avenue before? Do you see evidence of lions? No, but I see evidence of a possum or some other critter right there. How many have seen a lion walking down Chino or Chino Hills? Upland? Fontana? Lionsville? Anything? No, there's no lions. Oh, yes, there are. Our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities, evil rulers. You know what? I can see the evidence of lions all around me. Why? I can't see the lion when he's prowling. Gazelle, do you see the lion when he's prowling? No, he's hiding, looking for a weakness. There's lions all around us, my friends, everywhere, because there's lies. There's lies out there coming across as truth. And every time in the evil days, you see what is considered evil is now good. What was good is now evil. And there's a lie. And who's the father of all lies? Satan, the enemy. He's the father of all lies. If we can get you to bite on a little lie, we've got you set. When you go fishing, the fish grabs your hook. What do you have to do, anglers? You have to what? Set it. And the problem is, he's been tempting us and teasing us. And some of us have bought into the health, wealth, and prosperity just a little bit. I got him. And at a moment of weakness, he's going to set that hook. And the world is full of lies. If it's contrary to the book of truth, it is a lie. There are lies and lions everywhere. There's also injustice happening. If God was a sovereign God, he wouldn't allow injustice, right? Jews in Babylon. 70 years? You've got to be kidding me, Lord. Nope. I'll double it if you're not careful. There's injustice. Why? Because we live in a fallen world, and we live in a world where there's battles against good and evil. There is injustice. That's why you need to pray. There's nothing more powerful than the prayer warriors gathering and praying. That's why we prayed this morning, to pray for the people that are being treated unjustly. And I'm telling you what ABC, what she went through this week, that was horrible. But I'm telling you what was worse was the previous nominee for the Supreme Court Justice, Kavanaugh. Talk about an injustice. There's injustice out there. There's also going to be oppression. Well, Pastor, that's real encouraging. Way to end on a good note. People are going to come down on the church. Why? Because you're standing up for truth and righteousness. That's not oppression. Talk to anyone living in China, Indonesia, and other places where just simply gathering together to pray would cause you to go to a labor camp. And I'm not making it up. And if our country still goes down that road that it's on right now, we may end up being like that. There is oppression. But we are not the one oppressing. Don't buy into that lie. You're being oppressed by the enemy. By the way, when a lion captures the gazelle, what does he do? Pounces on it. Oppresses. So the gazelle can't move. And so the gazelle is fighting for its life. And they get exhausted from fighting the lion, who is stronger by any means. And the moment the gazelle gives up, the lion goes for the jugular. Is the church given up? Where's the church at? You have to understand, there's a lot of nonsense happening. And when someone is opposing the common sense of God's word, are you willing to stand up for it? I don't want anyone to defriend me on Facebook. Okay, I got a real simple idea for you. Get rid of Facebook. Unfriend Facebook. Stand up for truth and righteousness and pray, God, how can I serve you in the lion's den? How can I serve you in the critic's den? A lot of lions out there. Because it's all based on spiritual truths being attacked. I believe 2020 is demanding believers and churches to choose if they're willing to commit a crime or a sin, and God allow them the consequences of both.